Wealth can be measured in many ways. As it grows, life can quickly become complex, creating the need for more focused planning. Welcome to We're Talking Money with OmniStar Financial Group. OmniStar has been helping clients achieve financial success for more than 20 years in a client-centric and stress-free environment. With a reputation built on a long track record of working with people who want to grow and protect their assets, OmniStar illuminates the blind spots and provides actionable strategies to help you achieve what's most important. This is where you can count on straightforward and unbiased advice from a team of professionals that are passionate about your success.
Welcome to another episode of We're Talking Money Expert Series, and today we're going to be diving into investments. We've been having a little bit of fun the last few weeks talking through insurances, life insurance, disability insurance. There's a lot of other insurances out there, but we thought we'd get off the insurance track for a little bit. People don't always want to be paying for stuff that they might not want, and everybody loves investments. So today we're going to dive into 101 on investments, talking through different types of accounts, why you should be investing, you know, what the pros and cons are of these different accounts. And once again, we're going to be here with Phil Clark talking through this series of We're Talking Money Expert Series. So why don't we get started talking about why you should invest? You know, it's kind of a fun topic to think about. You can spend your money or you cannot spend your money. And when you not spend your money, you can just leave it in a bank account. But, you know, we wouldn't call that investing. You're not going to make a whole lot of money there. So when you start thinking about it, most people are going to want to invest in something with their money. You know, I think it's something, you know, we're talking about this coming up real soon about investing in real estate. We're actually doing our We're Talking Money live episode on real estate. Everybody likes real estate. They think it's this flashy thing. But at the same time, there's a lot of circumstances where someone's really not qualified to be investing in real estate. And, you know, frankly, they might not be qualified to be picking stocks either. But that doesn't mean that they can't hire a professional to help them in either of those categories, or they can't, you know, do their own research and get due diligence. But just, you know, as a point, there's a lot of things you can invest in. It's not just the stock market. It's not just real estate. But for today, we're going to talk through some of the basic accounts so you can set up as an individual, or you might have through your employer, that allow you to put some money away, talk about the advantages of those different accounts, and really the compounding effect of starting earlier, whether or not it's in the market, it's in another investment. The perk of it is the compounding interest. You know, you make money with your money, so you don't have to, you know, steal from Peter to pay Paul. You don't have to keep moving money from left pocket to right pocket. Your money keeps making you more money. Phil, why don't you just talk about some of the numbers that we found? And these are simple calculations, but it really shows the true power of compounding interest.
Yeah, it's a great point, Alex. And thanks for having me back. I'm enjoying this series. You've done a good job putting together a number of topics, and we've got a ways to go, as I understand it.
We're scratching the surface.
Yeah, man. I like it, though. I think this kind of series is great for listeners because some days we think of it as being very simple, but a lot of the things that we talk about are well beyond simple, simply because most people just don't understand a lot of these things. And maybe more importantly, they don't understand how so many of these things go together. One can affect another. And so the coordination of all these things has to be thought about. But to your point and today's subject, specifically investments, I think one of the key ingredients to investing is that it helps you build wealth. And you said a few minutes ago, you mentioned real estate. Not everybody early in their life has the ability to go to the bank and get financing for a rental property. So if they don't inherit that property, or if they don't have a lot of money saved where they can go write a check, investing in more traditional ways might be the only opportunity.
And you don't have to kick out tenants when you buy shares of Coca-Cola.
That is correct. You can let Coca-Cola do all the work and you get the benefit of their stock growing. And over time, you know, we look at Coca-Cola and we can easily say that that's been a real winner for decade after decade after decade. So you're right. Kicking a tenant out is not as easy as it sounds. If they don't pay their rent, it's not as simple as telling them they've got to leave. Eviction can be very, very difficult and quite time consuming. So, but Alex mentioned compound interest, and I've been talking about that most of my 30 years in the investment and insurance business. And one of the things that never gets old is talking about the effects of compounding. So in the examples that Alex was mentioning, $2,000 a year from age 25 to 35 at a 10% rate of return, assuming you retire at age 65, that $2,000 a year, making that investment for just 10 years. So you've put away $20,000 by the time you're 35 years old, with a 10% average return, when you're 65, that $20,000 would be worth $560,000. That's a lot of money, considering that all you did was save $2,000 a year for 10 years. $20,000 was your basis. And now you've got well over a half of a million at retirement. Big deal.
Pretty impressive number.
Yeah. Now take that same number and go $2,000 a year from 35 through age 65. So now you're investing $60,000 over 30 years, same rate of return. You end up with $330,000. Now that is the effect of compound interest. 10 years of $2,000 a year versus 30 years of $2,000 a year. The difference is huge.
Yeah, that's a massive difference. And you know, for our listeners out there, we're not advocating the 10% in every investment ever. You're not going to, 10% is a hard number to achieve. You'll get it some years in the market, some years you won't. But over, you know, a straight line 10-year or 30-year, like this example, that'd be a hard number to tackle and to get. But the point of, you know, the example is starting early and using less money can yield you a much larger return than starting later and trying to play catch up. Yeah. And we frequently see this with clients, and I've previously seen this working with a lot of younger clients, where if somebody starts at 25, they could retire at 50, because most people don't start planning for retirement until they're 45 or 50. The kids are starting to get out of the house. Their mortgage is starting to get paid down. They've been settled in their jobs for a little while. And now they have this revelation, if you will, that, whoa, retirement's 10 years out. It's 15 years out. How am I going to get there? Maybe they've been matching, you know, doing their match and their 401k for a while. Maybe they've got $100,000 or $200,000 saved. But for somebody who's making $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, like a lot of the people that we work with, frankly, having one or two times your salary at retirement is not going to get you very far. It's going to get you about 1 or 2 years.
Never going to be able to maintain the same lifestyle that they're used to living, Alex. If they get there with that amount of money, that's small. It pales in comparison to what they're used to earning and spending. And so one of the things that I don't think we can ever reiterate enough is you got to start early. The example proves that the sooner you start, the better off you are, and the fewer dollars you have to put away. I mean, you really get away with putting away fewer dollars and have a bigger nest egg if you start soon. And you're exactly right. If someone were to start, if they got disciplined at 25 years old and they saved for 20 years to age 45, they could easily retire at 50 if they just plan for that. But they got to start early. And if they started at 20 or 21 or 22, just 3 or 4 years makes a huge difference when we get up to, say, 55, 60 years old. People don't think that 2 or 3 years would make a significant difference, but money can double every 7 years. These types are with using these returns. And so all of a sudden, 3 years, 2 years, 4 years can make a huge difference.
Yeah, and I think a great image to really think over this point before we move on is, if you've ever seen one of those bar graphs showing, you know, your projected net worth over the next 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, and you look at it and it grows every year. And if you look at the actual dollar amount each year, it jumps higher and higher and higher those later years. It's a drastic increase over those first years. And what people always think about is, oh, if I just wait 3 more years or 4 more years and then I can start saving, they're chopping, they think in their head, okay, I'll just cut those 3 little years off the front, but I'll still get that same growth on the back end. When you look at a bar chart like that of your net worth, you need to think that if you're cutting the 3 years on the front, you're really taking those last 3 years of growth off the table.
That's right.
And when you think about that, that could be 50% of your portfolio. It could be 30% of your portfolio, 20%. It's a very large sum. And after 30 years or 40 years of saving, you know, maybe you start at $5,000 a year or $3,000 a year. And at that point, you might have $2 million, $3 million in a portfolio. That extra 10% is $300,000. It's not the $3,000 or $5,000 you've been putting away every year. You just missed out on appreciation of $300,000, $200,000, $500,000 that last year.
Can be huge.
And that's what you're missing. You're not missing those first years. So making sure you start early is huge.
So true. It's all about timing, but it's time in the market, not timing the market. And I think people get that confused a lot. So great way to get started, compound interest and starting early. getting into some kind of investment, regardless of what it is, just getting started, saving something. There's nothing simpler than that. And it may not be everything that you want to do, but start somewhere, work with a professional, get the advice that you need, the help that you need to be able to plan for your future, and you'd be amazed at what you can accomplish. So why don't we talk about some of these account types, Alex, so the listeners will know what might be the right fit for them if they're a do-it-yourselfer, and if they're not, they can certainly reach out to us or someone like us and get some more help.
Definitely. So we're going to follow this episode up with another one diving into investment specifics. But I think it's a pretty frequent question when you're talking to someone, you know, even some people that are fairly well-versed. A lot of people understand a 401k, but even some of our, you know, more astute or, you know, more focused on learning the ways of the market, clients that are really in the market, they have questions about this. And they'll be like, so what is a Roth IRA? What is an IRA? What's my 401k balance? And sometimes it takes a little just to explain your 401k, your Roth IRA, your individual account. That is not an investment. That is a shell. Your investment goes in that. What that shell is your taxation. It's the options around the account. It's your what you can do with the funds that are in the account. But it's not actually the investments in the account. So today we're going to talk about accounts, those shells, those basic tax formations, if you will, that you could be investing in. And then we'll follow this up with a pretty deep dive into different types of investments, what might make the most sense based off your individual situation.
Yeah, sense to me. Sounds good. So where are we going to start?
So we're going to start with the individual account. When people talk about trading penny stocks or day trading or, oh, I'm going to go buy XYZ company because it's my favorite. When you think about that type of an account, we tend to think about the individual account. The individual account is going to not really have a tax advantage. There is one tax advantage, and that comes with long-term gains, but the individual account allows you to put money in and pull money out. There's no federal regulation on it. There's no specific retirement protocol around it. It's what you're going to do once you've, you know, taken advantage of your retirement funds. And you know, if you have a lot of money, most of your assets are probably going to be in an individual account, also called a brokerage account, different names. But the way this account works is you can basically put money in, you can purchase stocks, mutual funds, ETFs, bonds, options, you name it, financial world is available to you. But once you have it in there, your assets will grow, but they don't grow tax deferred. So as your assets grow, you're going to pay capital gains tax if you sell anything, and you're also going to pay tax on the assets inside of the account as they generate dividends, as they generate income, as there's turnover inside the portfolio. We'll talk about that in the next episode, what might be causing that. But changes in the portfolio composition are going to cause taxes to be dispersed. So you might get a tax bill at the end of the year from your advisor or from whoever's holding your account. And that would be something to be aware of in an individual account. That being said, for most people, this should not be the first account you fund. You probably are going to want to have your savings in order for quick money you can get a hold of. And then you're going to likely want to start with an IRA, Roth IRA, or 401k type plan, because there are some perks and advantages to it. The one good thing with an individual account is if you do keep any of your investments over a year, they get sold at capital gains rates. It has its own capital gains rate tax bracket, but safe rule of thumb is capital gains rates, long-term capital gains rates is roughly half of whatever your income rate is, give or take a little bit. It doesn't quite match up to that bracket, but that's pretty close to where it's at.
So individual accounts, Alex, perfect for someone who wants to park money, invest money. Essentially, it's a savings or checking account, if you will, that allows them to hold stocks and bonds and other types of investments. They can get to the money without penalty. There's no contribution limit. And they get the benefit of a better tax rate if they sell a security after holding it for a year. They get that long-term gain rate versus the short-term, which we all know is basically the same as ordinary income. So you're going to pay maximum tax if you sell it short-term. So obviously that speaks a little bit to our philosophy of long-term investing, and really investing should be thought of as long-term. It shouldn't be a short-term game plan. But individual account sounds pretty simple, can be used for almost anything. And we even have check writing on those accounts. So you could get to that money by way of an ATM card or check writing. So plenty of flexibility with that account. But I think what our listeners really want to talk about are these tax-advantaged accounts. So let's dive into those, Alex. Tell us what we're going to learn on tax-advantaged programs.
So this is where your long-term savings should be. The key thing to remember is that if the government's giving you something, tax advantages, they probably want something in return.
No. Not right? The government.
Never would have figured that one out, but they do provide some incentives, and the incentive is they're trying to motivate our population to prepare for retirement, and by doing that, you know, they're giving you incentives. That being said, the government likes their taxes, so they're going to find a way to tax you at some point, but there are some small incentives. So we'll get started on going through this. The one key thing to be aware of is there are contribution limits on these accounts. They vary by account, if it's individual account versus a corporate or business-sponsored account like a 401k. Another thing to be aware of is that there's usually a catch-up provision. So if you're over age 50, you can be allowed to put in additional funds into these accounts. And this is kind of a, you know, when we talked about people kind of look around 45, 50, and they're like, oh, I've got retirement in 15 years. The government's aware that most people are like that, and so they give you a catch-up provision so you can kind of cover that distance then.
Most investors, I mean, and it's been this way for years, they're behind.
Yep.
People don't save enough. And usually, just like with your exams in college, you start studying the night before. People tend to start preparing for retirement.
Procrastinators.
It's total procrastination. And so the government knows that. So they've put some catch-up provisions in place to at least help. But let's face it, the catch-up provision is very small, and it's not going to fix the problem. What really needs to happen is it'll help, but what really should happen is preparation for retirement should begin as soon as you begin your career. It should not be delayed.
Agreed. I mean, it costs a lot less if you do it that way.
Oh, yes. A lot less. We talked about that at the beginning. Yeah. Huge difference if you start early.
So let's start with just a traditional IRA. The traditional IRA right now, it's got about a $6,000 a year limit. If you've got that catch-up provision, the government will give you an extra $1,000 a year you can put in.
So for 2020, $6,000, and if you're 50 years old or older, you can put in an additional $1,000 for a total of $7,000 per year in 2020.
Correct. And okay, if you're doing the math on the other end, you probably are going to notice that that's not a whole lot of money. And if you're trying to fund your lavish lifestyle where you spend $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 a year, hopefully you've done something else besides just start this IRA at age 50. That being said, if it started early, great tool. The way the government taxes this tool is that you get a full deduction for whatever you put in the account. So basically, you didn't make the income. Like I said earlier, the government always likes their taxes. So what they're going to do is when you decide to pull the funds out in retirement, and if you don't decide to pull the funds out, they start RMDs on you at age 72 now. But what they will do is you will be taxed at full income tax rates. So here's where a difference comes in between those individual accounts where you get long-term capital gains rates if you hold your money and you're taxed at half of income rates. With the IRA, you're taxed at your full income rate, which is something not a lot of people are aware of because that's typically the same tax rule as our 401k plan. So you might have thought that, you know, you've saved up properly planned and you've got a couple million dollars maybe in your 401k. And now you're pulling out, let's call it $200,000 a year for retirement or $100,000 a year for retirement, and 20 or 30% of that's getting paid out in taxes. That's really important because you have to end up pulling 30% more just to cover that tax gap. That being said, growth along the way in any income generated in the account, you are not actually taxed on it until you pull the funds out of the account in retirement. So this is another advantage over the individual account we mentioned earlier. Phil, you want to comment on a couple of the other things that are important about an IRA?
Yeah, IRAs are great tools to your point, Alex. The limitation, though, really is that you can only do that $6,000 or $7,000 a year. So it's a help, but there has to be more. That's rarely going to get anyone to a position of strength when it comes to being able to fund their retirement. So yes, you get to tax deduct that going in, so that's a benefit. You pay full income tax coming out. That is what it is. That's what you said a little while ago. If the government gives you something, they're going to want something in return. So an IRA is pretty straightforward. They've been around for a long time. The benefits are just that. You can use them to help you along the way in preparing for retirement. A couple of things that we haven't mentioned would be, even if your spouse is not working, there's a chance that you can still have an IRA. And if you're working and you're in another plan through your employer, it doesn't mean that you are excluded from an IRA. You could still potentially use the IRA. And there's a chance that while the deduction may not be given to you on the front end, you could still get some of the tax benefits of growth in a tax-deferred environment by using the IRA. So there's little nuances that many people don't know about within the regulations. If you know those rules, you can use IRAs to your benefit in a number of ways. So might be where the use of an advisor or a firm like ours comes into play so that you get the right advice and you can maximize these things. That leads us into a Roth IRA, and the two work similarly, and you can use the IRA to fund a Roth in some cases if you're excluded from using a Roth. But we'll get to that in just a minute. Why don't you dive into Roth and let's learn something about that as compared to the traditional IRA.
So Roth is an account that is much newer than the traditional IRA, and it's kind of the fad, if you will, of younger people right now, and for a pretty good reason. The way the Roth works is it flips the taxation on its head from a traditional IRA. Essentially, you pay full income tax now, you make your contribution into the account, and then all of the growth and everything you withdraw from the account in retirement are completely tax-free.
So instead of getting a tax deduction going in, you use after-tax dollars to fund the Roth, but you're now free from tax on the growth and income tax forever.
Correct. And when you think about most people's earning careers, typically we see people hitting the peak earning around 45, 50, 55, they start kind of declining or they start stepping away. Usually incomes have started to peter out around 60.
That's a heck of a deal though. You get to put the money in after tax. So unless you're in a very high tax bracket, putting that money in after tax, man, if you're 40 or 45 years old and you've got 10, 20, 30, 40 years, 50 years maybe without being taxed on any of the growth or the distribution. And Alex, on this contract on the Roth, you're not forced to pull it out at 72 years old, right?
Correct. You can just keep letting it grow. And so it's very rare where it does not make sense to do the Roth IRA over a traditional, especially for a lot of people that are before those high earning years. I mean, you can almost blanket statement and say if you're under 45, you should be doing a Roth IRA over a traditional. If you are making $1 million a year, $2 million a year, first, you're going to be phased out of the Roth IRA, and we'll talk about how you can still fund that. But it becomes a little bit less advantageous. Where that can kind of be balanced, and this is where you talk to an advisor, is you want to look at your tax scenario in retirement. If you know you make a ton of money now, but you don't really live off of a lot, that's not a very common thing. Most people who make a lot spend a lot. If you're not going to be spending very much money in retirement, you know your income tax bracket's going to be very low because of that. Once again, you're also kind of guessing on the government not increasing taxes down the road. But if that all played out hypothetically, then the IRA could potentially be better just because you're not taking as much income as you're making now.
The Roth IRA.
The traditional IRA.
Traditional if you have super high tax.
If you have, the traditional would make sense if you're making a ton of money now, but yep, you don't think you're going to spend a lot in retirement.
Yeah.
If you're like most people and you're probably going to spend pretty similar in retirement to how you spend now, you're going to be better with the Roth IRA.
Take the deduction now and pay some tax when you make distributions down the road.
Yeah, if you're doing the IRA. The other cool thing about the Roth is that, well, I guess it's not cool, but it's, what's it called? They won't let you use them eventually.
I don't know.
The other thing that's important about a Roth IRA is that there's an income range where you're allowed to make contributions to a Roth IRA. If you make too much money, you're not actually allowed to make contributions. This is where a nifty tool called a backdoor Roth IRA comes into play. And basically what you do is you fund an IRA with the amount that you were going to put in your Roth, but you don't take the deduction on it. And then after you do that, the government allows you to convert your IRA into a Roth IRA so that it can continue to grow and it is withdrawn tax-free down the road. It actually costs you nothing more than it would have to just originally fund the Roth IRA the way you would have because you had to pay taxes anyway. But it allows people to get around that little caveat of your income bracket potentially being too high to fund it.
Yeah, I mean, you can lose the right to put money into a Roth. And so if you make too much, you're phased out. And if you hit that phase out, then the only way to get money in a Roth is the backdoor method that you just talked about. And I think that's a really useful technique if you know it's there. And we get calls all the time, Alex. We talk to people a lot about this backdoor technique, and they hear it and they think, okay, that must be a good fit for me. But even the backdoor technique, as good as it sounds, still needs to be considered as part of your overall plan. I don't think anybody should just assume, oh, that must be a good thing. I read it in Kiplinger or I heard it on the news. I should do it. It still needs to be a good fit for what you're trying to accomplish, both short-term and long-term.
Agreed. And one new thing that's come out recently as we start transitioning into the 401k topic is there are now Roth 401ks. And these have been around for a little bit. They're becoming more popular now. But the real nice thing about a Roth 401k is you don't have to worry about your income level. And you also don't have to worry about that little $6,000 contribution limit.
So perfect segue into 401k. So now we've covered traditional or basic brokerage accounts, traditional IRAs, Roth IRAs, big tax advantage there.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're into 401k or what we'll call corporate style plans. So either you're a business owner or you work in a company or a small business that offers a 401k. And so now we learn that you have traditional 401k opportunities and there's Roth 401k opportunities. And income doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how much you make. You can still participate in the Roth portion of the 401k. One thing, Alex, that our listeners may or may not know, your employer has to elect to offer that Roth benefit. If it's not part of the plan document, it's not a benefit that's just automatic in a K plan. Your employer has to elect it. But the best news is if your employer doesn't have that, if it's not available to you, let your employer know that you want it. It does not cost the employer any more money from a testing standpoint or administration standpoint. It's just simply an add to the plan.
Yeah, and I think they're definitely becoming more popular now as Roth IRAs are coming to light. And that's kind of the new account, if you will, that everyone wants to have is, you know, why am I not doing my Roth IRA, or I've got to be doing my Roth IRA. People are starting to ask their employers, can I Roth my 401k? And they may not know what that means, but it's getting employers to start offering this benefit much more commonly. And it's a great benefit.
Huge benefits. Really, yeah. Really good, particularly for the high income earners in a company where, one, outside of the company, they probably wouldn't be able to use a Roth. In this case, they could. And if they had specific planning objectives, a Roth might make sense for them, or at least some portion of their savings perhaps would be best pointed towards the Roth. So really a cool feature that came out a number of years ago. And as you said, Alex, it's really gaining momentum. We're seeing it a lot in the plans that we manage, and I don't think it's going to slow down.
Yep, that is for sure. Definitely taken off. But let's summarize some of the 401k info and then a couple of concerns with retirement accounts you should just be aware of, and we'll wrap this episode up. The big thing with the 401k plan is that you can contribute a lot more, over three times as much more. An individual for this year, 2020, can contribute up to $19,500 per person. That catch-up provision of $1,000 on your traditional and Roth IRA is now $6,500 for the 401k accounts. Employers can also make an additional contribution. So that's only the employee deferral that we just mentioned, but you can do a total of $57,000 or $63,500 into the plan, including all sources of funding. Your deferral can only be $19,500, but employer contributions, profit sharing amounts, other values can increase that number.
So if you're below 50 years old, the maximum that can go in that plan is $57,000. But if you're 50 or over, 63.5 between your deferrals, the employee's deferrals, the match from the employer, profit sharing, any of those things, 63.5, that is a serious difference when we compare it to the IRA.
Correct. And that's a number where if you start doing that in your mid-30s, late-30s, you're looking at a really healthy retirement come 60, 65.
Yeah,
that is going to set you up pretty well.
That's huge, huge compared to the IRA. And if you're in a 401k environment, meaning your employer offers this kind of benefit, if you're not taking advantage of it, please reconsider that. And I would encourage you to put as much as you can in that plan. And if your employer offers a match, which many of them do, do not put less than you need to put in there to get that maximum match from your employer. So if they give you a dollar for dollar match up to 3% or 4%, make sure you're putting in 3 or 4%. Do not leave money on the table. That's free money, hard to come by these days. So if you can get it from the employer with no cost, by all means, do not leave it on the table.
Yeah, I always like to joke with clients that, you know, as good of investment advisors and wealth managers as we try to be, and as hard as we strive to construct the best portfolios we can for our clients, I don't think any of us would ever guarantee a 100% return on your investment.
Doesn't exist, does it?
Well, you can get one with your employer's match. So make sure you're taking that match. It's free money. It doubles your investment right out the gate. So make sure you take advantage of that. That's huge.
Heck of a deal. If your employer offers it, do not say to them, I don't want your money. Take it. You're working hard for them. They're offering it. Take the benefit.
Oh, yeah. We could go a little deeper on all this, but just for the sake of time and getting the key points out, let's cover a couple of the concerns. One of the big ones right off the bat and why these accounts are not quite as flexible as the individual account is that if you withdraw money prior to 59 and a half, you are hit with a 10% penalty by the government. That is on top of any taxes you would owe on the investment. So there's a 10% penalty right off the top. The caveat to that is if you have an employer-sponsored plan and you have a separation from service after age 55, even though you're 4.5 years younger than 59 and a half, you can start taking withdrawals at that point because of your separation from service. And there's a few other caveats to that. Phil, maybe you want to talk, you know, there's the equal distribution rule, which you can take. I'll let Phil talk through that a little bit. But
well, just quickly, Alex, I would say that 59 and a half is the rule of thumb, and that's really what everybody should be thinking about. There is a couple of options for taking money prior to 59 and a half with no penalties. One is the separation from service rule that you were just talking about. The other one is a section 72T, I believe it's called.
72 something, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Not so frequently used.
Right, it's not frequently used. And the reason for that is you have to take systematic distributions. They have to be what's called substantially equal. And once you start it, you cannot stop it until 5 years or 59 and a half, whichever is greater. So once you crank up that program, it's not one that can easily be undone. Systematic withdrawals or 72T is not always the best option, but it is an option. If you know the income is needed and you're going to keep it going for some time, then 72T could be a reasonable solution. Outside of that, 59 and a half really is the number where you should be focused. And for dollars that you need to access prior to 59 and a half, in other words, you want to retire early, that's where other investments come into play. The individual account that you talked about, the brokerage account, you can get to that with no penalties. Potentially a Roth, if you start funding it early enough, you could get to the Roth with zero implication. At least you could get your principal back at any point with no implication. And you could consider rental properties, for example. That could create passive income streams to you that would allow you to have income prior to 59 and a half. So really, it's really all about planning, Alex. What we tell clients all the time, depending on what you want to accomplish, there's a tool or a technique literally for every scenario. As long as you let us know what it is you're trying to accomplish, we can probably build whatever you need with some pretty solid probability for success.
I would have to agree with that. I think that's about it for today. Just remember that as you're starting to save into these accounts and you're starting to put money away for retirement, make sure you talk to somebody. Don't just guess at it. If you've got a goal in mind, a very specific number you want to have of income in retirement or a certain age you want to be able to retire, make sure you've done some planning around that. You know, the one thing we can guarantee in this industry, and you can't say guarantee about much, is that money does not appear in retirement. You've got to put it there.
Yeah, so man,
getting
that's
started
well said.
Earlier, getting started intentionally, those are great, great steps to making sure that you're properly prepared for retirement.
Yeah, what do they say? It's been around for a long time. People don't plan to fail.
Yeah, you fail to plan.
Fail to plan. There you go. Alex, great show today. Thanks again for having me and for putting all this together.
You're welcome. Great having you again. And until next time, we'll talk about fun investments and stuff.
Sounds good, Alex. See you next time.
Thanks for joining us on We're Talking Money. Be sure to visit our website, www.omnistarfinancial.com, where you can learn more about how we provide value to our clients. Subscribe to the show and our newsletters, and drop us a line with suggestions for upcoming shows. If you enjoyed today's episode, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes or simply tell a friend about the show. This podcast is a publication of OmniStar Financial Group. Any information provided has been prepared from sources believed to be reliable, but its accuracy is not guaranteed, does not represent all available data necessary for making business or investment decisions, and is for informational purposes only and does not represent or constitute any recommendations. All expressions of opinion reflect that of the authors and are subject to change. If this podcast contains any projections, forecasts, guarantees, and/or predictions of any kind, you're required to ignore the same. OmniStar is not engaged in the practice of law or accounting, and any information in this podcast should not be construed legal or tax advice. Any distributions, use, or copying of this podcast, other than the intended recipients, is unauthorized.